Hi there. We have a favor to ask. If you're enjoying the DLC Live podcast and you're listening on a platform that lets you leave a rating or a review, leave us a 5-star rating. Maybe take a minute to write a quick review. It really helps and we really appreciate it. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to DLC Live, your source for educational and inspirational interviews with mental health experts and advocates from around the world. Now, here's your host, creator of the DLC Anxiety Worldwide Mental Health Community, Dean Stott.
Technical difficulties, what's happening, mate?
I just had a black screen. I've got the horror feeling that you all saw me stood there going, what's happening here? I'm here now.
We're back.
Nice hoodie.
Just telling the followers to come back because you were running a couple of minutes late. So I was making sure that you were still coming, but
I kept pressing request to join, and it was like, nah, mate, I'm not doing that. I was like, please, I want to talk to Dean. And Instagram was like, nah. I was like, yeah. put it let me. Excellent. Yeah, nice hoodie. I heard someone else cut that.
Miami Dolphins. I've actually been to Miami when 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Before COVID. It was really nice. First time in America as well.
Yeah.
Got to see the Florida course, went to Disney. It was cool.
Excellent. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer Florida or Wales?
It's a tough question. Both for different reasons, Josh.
No cop out. Excellent. It's been a while since we've done these. They're absolutely brilliant.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, I think it will be really cool if we discuss a bit about what we've been hearing about this week in the world of anxiety and mental health. I think it's been really helpful. I know I've got something really cool that I like to talk about today. And I'm interested to hear what you've heard. But what have you heard, by the way, Dean?
I'm gonna come with you with a couple of different things today, Josh.
Okay.
The first one, and I think it's a really interesting one, given your daytime job when you're not being the Instagram Lothario that you are. And by the way.
Lothario, that's fantastic.
By the way, I can see your reels is doing well, still going strong.
I've only ever made 3 reels videos. My third one's at like almost 300,000 or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you've not seen that, yeah, check it out.
Definitely. Because obviously you're a psychotherapist, I'm not sure on your anxiety recovery if you ever had therapy. I got the same reoccurring question this week from followers, and that was, how do I reduce my anxiety when it's time to go and see the therapist? Just the actual thought of going into therapy is actually making them anxious. So it's increasing their anxiety, and they're obviously feeling more afraid. There's a lot of fear. Because therapy is obviously for anxiety to reduce. So it's really interesting seeing that in some cases it can actually increase the anxiety with the an appointment looming around the corner.
Yeah, what a brilliant question. First of all, the first thing I'll say is absolutely normal to be anxious before you go to therapy. When you go to therapy, you talk about deeply personal things. Sometimes you talk about your fears. Sometimes you talk about things that you feel guilty about talking about. And with that comes natural anxiety. I still see a therapist now and then, just because of the job I do. So I've got to keep on top of it. And yeah, if I change my therapist, I'm naturally going to be anxious. I'm going to see someone and I'm going to be anxious because you are running the, you know, you are about to expose your vulnerable side. Now, I am a therapist, so I do my best to try and make people feel comfortable. What I will say is that if you're anxious, you don't need to share anything that you don't want to. You will not be pressured. A good therapist will not pressure you into talking about stuff you don't want to talk about. You know, I've been through some pretty heavy stuff in my life, some traumatic stuff, and there's no way I'd share that on session one, and I wouldn't expect my clients to. But if they feel comfortable to, then I would happily listen to them and sit with them through it. It's absolutely normal to feel anxious. Don't fight it. It's a normal response. It's like, I'd feel really nervous if I went for a job interview.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to ask for that nervousness not to be there, because it's supposed to be there. And it's the same. If anything, therapy is more intense. You know, you're really putting yourself out there. And don't get me wrong, I love therapy with a good therapist. It's fantastic. But in general, you've got to, it's okay to be anxious. Don't try and get rid of it. And the more you go, and this is what we were talking about the other day, Dean, the more you actually go, see it as a kind of practice of exposure, where the more I practice going to my therapist and I actually tell my therapist that I'm anxious, then slowly the anxiety will come down anyway. So yeah, if you're nervous before therapy, that's normal. Like, that's okay. And that will, and it should, with a good therapist, just come down over time anyway.
I just saw a good question, one that I know is important to you as well, Josh. And that's, can a therapist diagnose?
Most therapists can. A psychologist can diagnose. A clinical psychologist can diagnose, not just a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, and a psychiatrist can offer diagnosis. I don't diagnose. I don't, you know, the nearest I'll get is saying, that sounds like panic disorder.
Yeah.
That sounds like agoraphobia. So let's treat it like that. But I don't really slam a label on someone. I'll just be like, it sounds a bit like panic disorder, agoraphobia, or health anxiety, you know, or, you know, let's work with that. So yeah, the people that can, who can diagnose are clinical psychologists and psychiatrists.
That's brilliant. And the other thing that I had, Josh, was I've had a lot of people asking and want your opinion on it. Pets for anxiety.
Ooh.
So I don't know if it's this time of year. Everyone seems to go for a, like, for a new pet. So I've had this question a lot, and they're asking, do pets help with anxiety? So will they help to bring anxiety down, having that distraction of looking after a new puppy or a new kid?
I'm all for pets. I think I just recently got a little puppy in the house, so I'm like 8-9 weeks old. Pets and mental health, in general, pets are really good for your mental health, particularly for depression. They are a healthy distraction. They're something you can invest in. They're something that can keep you company. That gives you a bit of purpose in the day to look after something. That makes it addresses loneliness. And yeah, for anxiety, it can be good because they can be very soothing. Mm-hmm. What I would steer clear from, because that's what I do, Dean, you know me, I have to give the alternative opinion, is that look at the reasons behind why you're getting a pet. If you're getting a pet because you're lonely and you want some company and you're ready to look after it and you know that it's going to help your depression, great. You know, if you're doing it because you genuinely feel quite anxious about the pandemic or winter or whatever, and you know that it will help conventional worries, then that's great. If you're getting a pet to rely on it to stop you from being anxious, then I'd consider perhaps why. You know, if you're worried about worry itself, or like we were chatting about today, Dean, about secondary fear, if you're doing it to hide from secondary fear, like, oh, I'll just get a dog or a cat or something so I can ignore you, then obviously you can always get a pet, it's great. But look at the purposes behind why you're doing it. I've seen some really cool stuff about pets and working with trauma, actually, PTSD. And that really interests me. So if you've got anxiety and flashbacks and things from a traumatic time in your life, I've seen actually a friend of mine actually has a trained dog that when they start experiencing flashbacks and re-traumatizing themselves, the dog comes and comforts that person. See, that's anxiety that goes into trauma. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, yeah, you know, that's great. That helps you. But I think if you're just fearing panic attacks, if you're just fearing anxiety, you know, always, a pet's always going to be great, but try not to over-rely on it for your development. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. So you're saying that it's good if you want it for the right reasons, if you're trying to have it as a distraction to not face your anxious symptoms, the anxious thoughts that you're getting, and you're using the pet almost like an emotional crutch, then maybe you need to think twice. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, if your pet's an it's a weird one, because like, if you're generally a worrier, it's okay to have an emotional crutch in your pet, you know. But it's a bit like, I'll give an example. If I'm agoraphobic and I get a pet and I can go outside with my dog.
Yeah.
But then what? I'm not actually learning that I can go outside on my own. So I start to rely on my pet, you know, a little bit.
The question that should be raised in there is, maybe you would be able to go outside without the pet, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, that's me offering my cynical, miserable alternative. But in general, yeah, pets are great.
Really? Yeah. What do you want to bring to the table today, Josh?
What am I bringing to the table today? I am bringing to the table something that annoys me. I was going to insult you then, but I'm not. We haven't done this for a while. What I'm bringing to the table today is the concept of overthinking. And what the hell that even means. Overthinking. Dean, what do you think overthinking means? It's something that's said all the time, but with no real explanation.
Well, going off of personal experience, when I had a panic disorder, overthinking for me was almost waking up in the morning, checking, am I anxious? And then throughout the day, almost having a thought, oh my God, I'm going to be anxious. And then lo and behold, the anxiety feelings would come. So I'd say overthinking for myself was a constant irrational thought. So maybe the same few thoughts that would flutter in my mind during the day, throughout the day. And it was almost a fear at the time, obviously. It was almost a fear of these thoughts. So I was trying to do everything to distract myself, to make myself not think about anxiety, because I knew that every time that I think about anxiety, I become anxious. So I think for myself, overthinking, like I said, was these irrational thoughts that were playing over and over in my head.
Yeah, I think that's a good explanation. What's really interesting, though, is that people often use the term overthinking as a critical, self-critical, almost description of what's happening. So what I hear a lot is, I'm an overthinker. I'm overthinking things again, you know, or from loved ones and people around them, you're just overthinking. Stop overthinking it. Mm-hmm. And actually, I find the term overthinking actually has quite negative connotations. And so what I like to do is explain actually what is overthinking. Overthinking isn't actually your fault. Actually, overthinking is your normal thinking brain, and then your threat response, your anxious brain on top of it. So you actually have more thoughts. You have the normal rational thoughts, like, I'm going to walk to the shops and buy a Snickers bar. But then overthinking occurs when we have the extra layer of threat response on the top. And anyone watching this will know is, what if you get to the shop and panic? What if you can't go back there? What if you bump into someone? What if someone's hiding behind that wall? What if this? What if that? What if? So then you've got the normal thoughts of, oh, it's a nice day, I'm walking to the shop, can't wait to buy a chocolate bar. And then on top of that, you've got an extra layer of thoughts going, what if? And then on top of that, you've got an extra voice going, why are you thinking like this? Why aren't you anxious? Why is this here? Why is it? And so rather than calling it overthinking, what you've actually got is layered thoughts. And that's not your fault. So when people say, oh, you're overthinking again. Oh, I'm just overthinking it. Well, actually, no. What it means is that your threat response is going off. So you've got racing thoughts. So I'd like to always twist overthinking to, well, actually, it's just racing thoughts. What you do in response to the racing thoughts is up to you. So if I'm walking to the shop and I've got those layers, I want to go to the shop. What if? Why am I thinking like this? Why am I overthinking it? I can just take a step back and go, right, I've noticed my anxious response is going off. I can disengage with these thoughts now because they're just going to be, they're all nonsense and they're just going to overwhelm me. So I'm going to be mindful. And that's what I want to put a positive twist on anyone who gets labeled an overthinker, because I don't agree with it. I think it's like naturally it's anxious thinking and a lot of it isn't our fault.
Yeah. Someone just said, my overthink. No, my racing thoughts make me money.
You manic.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Yeah. So with overthinking, I would say also it's probably used in the wrong sense as well. So someone who could be super organized might actually use it in the wrong term and say that they're an overthinker because they're organizing it, whatever they've got scheduled for the day. So I do think that there is a mislabeling as well with it. So yeah, maybe the term racing thoughts, like you said, or irrational thoughts, negative thinking patterns, maybe should be used over, because I do hear it used in the wrong term as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So if you're watching home and everyone's ever called you that, you're overthinking. All you need to do is go, well, actually, my amygdala has triggered a threat response in me, which is causing my neocortex to open up various thinking channels, actually. So not only have I got my normal brain, I've actually got to deal with all these threat responses and my own internal dialogue. So call me an overthinker if you want, but you can actually take some effort to understand how anxiety works, and because you're supposed to love and care about me.
Yeah. Well, I know that you will agree with this, but I think a lot of the stigma around mental health, the dismissal around anxiety and other mental health conditions, it's just due to the lack of psychoeducation from the people that are given it.
Absolutely. And it's a cultural thing. I just seen a comment then in the comments, my parents don't understand, they don't get, my boyfriend doesn't understand, my school doesn't understand. And the sad thing is you're still currently in the majority where lots of people still don't understand. Thankfully, you've got people like Dean raising awareness on his platform. I try my best with my books and talking nonsense. And I try my best working with institutions because people need to realize actually the role of not just anxiety, but disordered anxiety. And it needs to be known widespread. And it's got to start in stuff like schools, because not enough schools know about it. I work with schools every week with the clients and they don't know about it. You know, I'm trying to explain to them, no, your pupil has agoraphobia. No, your pupil has panic. So this is what's happening in their brain. They're not attention seeking. They're not misbehaving. They're just trying to calm down. And that's, we've got a long way to go, and we're going to keep doing it.
I was just going to say, do you think we will start to see changes in the education system regarding mental health?
Oh, I won't stop until they have changed. But by the time I see where we want to be at, I'll be fat and old and drinking beer and old people. So, yeah. So, but at least I can say I've done something.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you as well. Yeah. I think it really does need to. We've got physical education in schools, so that there's no reason why we shouldn't have mental health studies in there. And almost even learning CBT techniques from a young age can be really useful as well.
Oh, definitely. That's what we're starting to see now a little bit. The CBT techniques, not avoiding. I'd like to see people like talking about the role of the amygdala, the role of a threat response, and why it fires off so much as well. That would have really helped me. I don't know about you, Dean, but if someone would have told me that in school, I wouldn't have spent years having panic attacks. I don't know about you.
No, with me, psychoeducation is probably what helped me get from being in a scared, vulnerable place, thinking that I was never going to come out of it, to learning about it. And learning about each and every symptom and the reason that the body reacts that way almost gives you the power to know, yeah, no, this is fine. I'm okay. There's plenty of people that are going through this and there's plenty of people that have overcome this. Absolutely. So I think that psychoeducation is really important. Do you, Do you have anything else to bring to the table today, Josh?
No, I was just going to bring overthinking today. I like sort of to reflect on that. I was looking forward to watching you sweat and trying to answer a question, a really difficult one out of the comments. But no, I think the questions you brought are really good. And I just want to, reflect on that label of overthinking. And the next time you hear it, just think of the chat between Dean and I and be like, is it, why are you using that? It makes no sense to label someone an overthinker, because actually overthinkers are intelligent, analytical people that use everything, that use their spectrum of probability, that use their intelligence to analyze things. And yes, when anxiety kicks in, it can be really annoying, but overthinking is not and shouldn't be a negative. And I genuinely, genuinely mean that.
What would your advice be to someone who's saying that they're getting dismissed from the parents because they believe that they are suffering with anxiety or depression or any mental health, and they're really trying to seek out some advice or some help from someone, but the parents are just dismissing them? What would your advice be?
Yeah, unfortunately, in my line of work and stuff, there are quite a lot of parents actually that just don't get it, because they come from a generation where talking about mental health was even way behind where we are now, where there was no social media, where emotional conservatism was revered. You know, this whole, in the UK, you have this really annoying phrase called "keep calm and carry on," and I want to burn everything with that slogan on, because it's not helpful. And just remember that your parents probably come from that generation, so it's not entirely their fault, but at the same time, it's incredibly frustrating and isolating when your parents don't get it. My advice to you is to say, if your parents mean well, try and understand it all. Sometimes you're not going to persuade it. Try your best to try and put it in terms that they'll understand. You know, like sometimes I explain anxiety to people who don't get anxiety. Like, you know, imagine you were summoned to the office by your boss or the head teacher, and, you know, and that feeling of horribleness. And as you get there, you're about to be reprimanded, but then you realize actually you weren't ever called there. You just have this feeling for no reason. That's one I try to communicate. If your parents are reasonable, try. I mean, I live in the real world. Some people don't have reasonable parents. In that case, I try and find someone who does get it, whether it's communicating through local charities, local organizations. If you're young or in college, school, or in education, talk to a welfare officer. There's many outlets, and use the internet wisely, in the sense that trying to find an outlet where you can talk. I know what it's like having a parent that doesn't get it. I know my parents like love me, but they just don't get it, and they don't have the emotional repertoire to even attempt to get it. Yeah. So in that sense, it's not your fault. You're just going to have to kind of see the bigger picture here and try and find that reassurance elsewhere. I hope that helps. I hope that's not a miserable answer.
No, I think that's a good answer, Josh. And I'm ready to answer a few questions before you go, if you are as well.
Let's do that.
I'll kick off with the first one. So, guys, if you've got any questions, fire away. Let's have a look. I'm just looking through them. We'll be a second.
You two need a YouTube channel. I've seen that.
That's interesting.
You'd have to see my bottom half then, and I'm not comfortable with that.
I do want to do more work on YouTube, but obviously Instagram takes up a lot of my time.
Oh, he's a busy man.
Come on, guys. So if anyone's got any questions, someone loves us from the USA. Fantastic.
I mean, we could just keep reading out compliments. That's fine. Yeah.
tips on weed and anxiety.
Over to you, Dean.
So, if you're looking at the science behind weed, you'd have to look at the THC, which is the chemical that produces the high. In plenty of studies, this chemical is actually known to induce paranoia and actually increase anxiety. So for some people, it can be a really bad thing, and it can actually induce a panic disorder. And there is many people that I've actually heard just from smoking one spliff that they've then gone into a panic disorder. And that's more than one occasion as well. However, we do know as well in the mental health community that certain aspects of weed is known to calm the mind and reduce anxiety. But I tend to just stick to, because obviously if it's got the THC in there that's going to produce the high, then there is a chance that you will have a panic attack. Over to you, Josh.
Am I answering that question as well? Someone who was addicted to cannabis for 3-4 years, and I really mean addicted, and when people say, it's not addictive, I was like, okay, well, why was I spending so much money smoking it every day and getting myself into debt? Bit of an addiction. It depends on your relationship with it. I'm not going to be a granddad about it. If you've got a healthy relationship with it, and you find that it's helpful for aspects of your life, to car or whatever, then you do that. If you're someone who's relying on it, like I was, you're going to ask trouble, because you're not actually addressing the anxiety. You are only teaching yourself that you require cannabis to calm down. And if that is you, then I would kind of consider something else. If you're using it for chronic medical conditions, that's a different story. I've heard it's stories about epilepsy and and fibromyalgia and all. I mean, that's not my field.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm just talking your average Joe, who's if you're stood there going, I feel really anxious, I need a spliff, then that's not the great, that I would advocate. If you're thinking, you know what, I feel dead stressed, I can't wait to go on, put on my TV show and roll a spliff, joy, that's a different story. It's your relationship with it.
Yeah.
If you're doing it to stop having panic attacks, then no, definitely not. I'm with you on that.
I was just going
to
say, Josh, and I also believe it's almost like how a panic disorder starts as well. It's if you're high and anxiety comes on, then 9 out of 10 times, your mind is then going to link smoking weed to being anxious. So I think then you're going down a path that maybe you don't want to go down. But like you said, if your relationship to it is a positive, calming one, then there is studies that suggest that it may not be the worst thing to do.
Absolutely, I think we answered that okay.
I don't know if you want to pick the next question.
Yeah, I'll pick one now. You're going to have to see my massive head come in. Let's have a look.
Oh, there you go.
Will auditory hallucinations occur for people who've overcome anxiety? Oh, God, I read that one out. It depends what kind of auditory hallucinations that you have. There's two types of auditory kind of hallucinations. For people that live with psychosis, you're going to get auditory hallucinations quite a lot. Whether or not you're anxious in response to that is up to you. Like if I was to work with someone with psychosis, I'd say, is it the auditory hallucinations that are scaring you, or is it our perception of them? Because you get people that hear auditory hallucinations and are like, no, whatever. You know, I live with permanent tinnitus and it used to really scare me. That's an auditory hallucination. It's not actually there. There's no noise. But it's my response to it that's the important thing. It doesn't bother me. That's the first type of auditory hallucination, in the sense that if you live with psychosis, that's what you have. It depends what they are. You're going to have to work through with a professional to get to get a bit of a clearer picture. The secondary auditory hallucination that you get is something when you are coming out in or out of a state of hypnagogia or hypnopompia. I think that's how they said. I just remember reading it. So you'll know this, Dean. I'm going to get this wrong the other way around. Hypnagogia is when we're waking up. So that, have you ever woken up in the morning, Dean, when you're like, oh, half asleep, and you go into the bathroom and you brush your teeth and you're whatever, and you're still half dreaming?
Yeah.
That's hypnagogia. And that allows us to experience kind of auditory hallucinations. So I'm still hearing voices in my dream. Similarly, hypnopompia is when we fall asleep. How many times have you kind of led in bed and you're about to go to sleep and then you start hearing voices in your dream, and then sometimes you have that weird dream where you fall over and wake up? That's hit the pump.
I didn't actually realise how common that was. That the way you said, that initial stage of between falling asleep and being asleep, all these audio, like you said, hallucinations that you can hear. And apparently, it's very. Yeah.
No, but that's what your brain.
I remember
does,
the first time that happened to me. Freaking
out. I do. When I go to sleep, I lie down and like, and then I just start hearing chatting because that's my brain turning off, going into sleep mode, you know. And that's the second type of auditory hallucinations. There's nothing wrong with that. That's normal, you know. The only thing you change is your perspective of that, you know. Like that's what happens when you go to sleep. That's like you're starting to dream. So that's the difference. So I hope that answers your question. Auditory hallucinations, if it's from a kind of like psychosis point of view, which is fine, don't be scared by psychosis, then you look at that. If it's just that kind of auditory hallucination where you're delirious, you're going to sleep, you're waking up, that's fine. I mean, you don't treat that because there's nothing wrong with it.
Someone's asking, could it also be a part of disassociation?
It can be, I mean, we haven't got enough time nor whatever to go through that complexity. But you can have auditory hallucinations in response to trauma, regarding whatever the trauma might be, you'd have to consider that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think if we answer one more, Josh, I think that'll be all right for our first.
Let's do that.
Let's have a look. Great job, guys. Love it.
Yeah, should we just change it to reading compliments? That'd be better.
Yeah, health anxiety tips. So I have touched on this a lot. I'll touch on it again because it's really important. Something that I went through when I had a panic disorder. So I think you'll find that with anxiety disorders, there's almost an overlap. So if someone's got a general anxiety disorder, they may also have a panic disorder. They may also have social phobias, different phobias. And regarding health anxiety, this is something that I would go to Dr. Google for and start to search for new anxiety symptoms, thinking that it was the next cancer or heart disease or whatever, just like major illness. And lo and behold, when you type into Google the symptoms that you've got, if you look hard enough, you're going to find that really worrying condition or illness, and then you're going to actually trick your brain into thinking that you could actually be sick. And I've done that on many occasions, been to the doctor, and luckily the doctor obviously knew that I was an anxious person, and obviously they start from base one instead of the end that you've seen, and they go through every single stage. So what I tend to say is, if you have a new anxiety symptom and you feel that you do have to search in Google, put in the symptom and then just put the word anxiety after it and see what comes up. With any new symptom, obviously go to your doctor and get diagnosis as well.
That's a good tip, that, for health anxiety. You should put that in any book that you are writing.
Mm.
Okay, letters. That's a good answer. I'll answer one, or we can answer one, or whatever, and then I can't really add to that. I mean, it's a good answer. There's a lot about health anxiety. Good responses to health anxiety.
Is medication good?
That's a conversation you're going to have with your doctor. I've seen medication work wonders with depression. With anxiety disorders, sometimes. But that's what I could have. This is a conversation you'd have to have with your doctor. I think I'll wait for one more. What if your partner is unintentionally making anxiety worse?
That's a good, very good question.
What if he's unintentionally? Sorry, I presume what gender? If they are unintentionally making the anxiety worse, then I'd actually have, if they're your partner, I'd actually have a conversation about it. but in a way that isn't accusatory. Yeah. Say, I can understand that it must be challenging for me to have anxiety and for you to be around that. But at the same time, I've noticed that my anxiety actually increases in response to your behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can work together by stopping this cycle or this loop where I get anxious, you react, it makes me more anxious, then you react again, and then we start going around in a cycle where we start to kind of fall out. What you do is you have that chat when you are calm. Do not chat when you are in the middle of anxiety. Do not start making demands. What you need to do is make a plan. You in therapy, we call it contracting. So you contract with your partner, and if they love you and care about you, they'll sit down and they will talk. If they don't want to sit down and talk and help you, get rid of them because they ain't worth being with.
Well, what I would just add to that, Josh, is obviously if the other person is actually having a bad day or feeling anxious, maybe don't bring it up then. Bring it up when both people are calm, yeah?
Oh, definitely. You've got to do it. Don't do it when you're anxious. You've got to both do it when you're calm, particularly if you're both in a good mood.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can work together. But you've got to, my special tip as well is never use the word you. If you want to communicate something, never use the word you. Just term, I feel like it would be beneficial for us rather than you make my anxiety worse. No, I feel like it would be beneficial for us if this could happen, you know? And then you start to put it in and talk together, empower your partner, whatever. But I do stand by it. If they don't tolerate your anxiety, get rid of them. I don't mess about me, Dean. I'm not, we're not here trying to train a monkey to do maths. You know, if you can't tolerate anxiety, then why are you with me? That's what I'd say. That's my agony. No. I wouldn't be writing an agony column many times.
No, I think that's really good because I've come across a lot of people who say that even the partners dismiss their anxiety. Now, obviously, anxiety, we know how common it is, and we know how strong each individual is who's going through an anxiety disorder. If you don't have that emotional support from the one person that you want to share your life with, then you are right. It is time to get rid of them. And I know it sounds drastic, but having someone who's there, who's going to be dismissing you and being negative towards you, is just going to make it worse.
Oh, yeah. That's what we can. We move on to dating advice next time. That'd be amazing.
We'll do that next time.
Grow lonely like us, but at least we're right.
I think that's a wonderful place to leave it, Josh. Thank you very much for coming on. We've had a little bit of a break. I'm not sure why. We've both been a bit busy.
We've both been a bit busy. We might have been writing a book.
Maybe.
We've both been a bit busy. And we'll do that. We'll get some loads of love in the comments as well, which is really nice.
No, do these lives
and stuff. We'll do the next one over on my channel. And we'll chat over there as well, because it'd be nice to add some more videos on my page, to be honest.
Nice, sounds great. Yeah. Thanks again, Josh, for coming on, mate. Appreciate everything you're doing. It's lovely seeing your community grow as well. Everyone, if you haven't followed Josh, make sure you go over to his account, give him some love.
Yeah.
And also, he's got a couple of books out that are a bit of all right. So, yeah.
I wrote them. Wouldn't bother. I wrote them.
Yeah, but enjoy the rest of your night, and I'll catch up with you soon, yeah?
You too, Dean. Thank you very much.
No problem. Take care, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to DLC Live. Be sure to follow Dean on Instagram at DLC Anxiety. Check our website at dlcanxiety.com and grab yourself a copy of our latest book, Untangle Your Anxiety, on Amazon today. See you next time.